since I had a good summer. It's been too long. It's been so long since I had a good summer. My heart feels like shit. That summer was a total.
Trigger Method Podcast. Coming to you live out of Portland, Oregon, here on a beautiful Saturday afternoon in the city. Spring has sprung, and so am I. I don't know why I really feel like coming in with a DJ vibe these days. Coming to you live. All right. That's my voice right there. What did you say? The other voice is that of my guest this episode, Paul Schlesinger. What did you say?
Ooh, I had a good summer. Said that in my bed about that. So bad to
hear. That's a project that my guest this episode, Paul Schlesinger, and I did a couple years ago called Inside Miracles. We never did anything with it, never released it. No, I guess Paul might have put it out somewhere. I look forward to making music again with Paul someday, and maybe we'll really put a final veneer on it like we talked about with Sean Kelly. Maybe we'll master it. Last episode we talked with Sean about mastering hot. Okay, enough with the DJ stuff. Or maybe a tiny bit more. I did karaoke last night at Baby Ketton Karaoke, Portland's very famous karaoke spot. They got the dankest, most deep cut book of songs you've ever heard. They got everything. Obscure indie punk, you name it. Deep cuts from the big artists, obscure artists. It's incredible. I don't know how they make these. I got to learn more about Baby Ketton. It's not Baby Kitten, it's Baby Ketton. That's part of their brand identity, is that they spell everything wrong. I like it. And of course, I, being the punk rock guy, I don't do a punk song. I do the most normcore song I could find. I want to know what love is. I want you to show me. Oh, yeah. I want to feel what love is. Foreigner. I go to Foreigner. I couldn't believe they had it because I heard that Baby Ketton, my girlfriend Lily, told me that they have every song except the top 100 karaoke songs. I couldn't believe that one wasn't one of the top 100s. Is it just too hard to sing to compete with Lou Gramm's original vocal? I don't know. I stepped up to the plate. My voice cracked a little, but I think I did okay. I want to learn how to really sing that song. I want to be that ringer at the karaoke who walks up. I got one song. I've mastered it. Perfect mic technique. Just blow the place away. That's my goal. I'm going to get a private room and just do that song 100 times till I just nail it. I want to know what love. It could take a little time to think it over. I don't know the lyrics yet, but I'm gonna. Okay. Why can't you just have fun, Jason, and not try and blow everyone's mind at the karaoke place? Just relax. Mess around. I don't know why. I have to talk with my therapist about that. I gotta say, though, man, the people liked that song. You have all these weird songs going on that people, half of the room doesn't know because it's so obscure. And then that one comes on and it's like, yep, we like it. It's a good song. Everyone knows it. So that's my karaoke report from last night. I must have mentioned, I think I talked about it with Sean last time, that I'm back at comedy. I'm doing comedy again. It's been so fun. This has been a crazy 3 weeks. Hadn't done comedy in 3 years at the Hutch show that we did down in Salem. I spontaneously did 20 minutes of stand-up, one song. I was planning on doing 20 songs. Since that day, I have done comedy, I don't even know how many times. Gone up at open mics, I've done showcases, I did this comedy festival out at the coast. the Cannon Beach Comedy Festival, performing with legends Eddie Pepitone, Baron Vaughn, Adam Caton Holland. Chloe Radcliffe was there. Phil Schallberger went out there with him. He's a flipping legend. Amazing show. I haven't performed in 3 years practically, maybe a couple times before the fest. I'm doing it on stage. Eddie Pepitone sitting there watching me. I don't even care what he thinks. I'm not worried about impressing him. That's the kind of zone I'm in. It's great. I'm not saying I'm great. I'm saying it's a great place to be when you're on stage. All this meditation, mindfulness stuff I talk about, these ayahuasca circles, these experiences like the death of my stepdad that I went through for 6 months taking care of him, holding his hand when he died, all that kind of stuff that I did in the in my break from comedy, I see how it has changed me. I mean, I see it every day, but when you're up on stage and you really, it's like a, being on stage doing stand-up comedy with just you and the mic, it's a bit of a brighter spotlight on your state of mind. So I've really noticed these changes in that petri dish that is the stand-up comedy stage. Paul and I, during our conversation, Paul Schlesinger, if you don't recall, if you haven't started at the beginning, Paul, I think he's been on the podcast a couple times. He was the very first person I talked to. We're looping back to the beginning here with Paul. And you're going, who's Paul Schlesinger? Well, I'll tell you, he's one of my best friends. Musician, comic, body worker, whatever you call it, massage therapist, etc. Clown. We talk a lot about comedy. We talk a lot about clowning. He's in the clown scene in Los Angeles. He explains what that is, how clowning has its, what makes clowning clowning and not improv or stand up or whatever. We get into all that stuff. It's very interesting to me. I hope it is to you too. Maybe you already know about clown. Maybe you don't. If you listen to this episode, that's kind of like an Australian accent. Episode. I'm like a stand-up now. You hear my voice? I'm doing this. I'm riffing. Meh. No, tone it down, Jason. Relax. Podcast mode. Take a breath. It's fine. You don't have to, just don't try so hard. You know, that's a big part of stand-up, big part of life. Don't try so hard. But I'm in a zone where not trying is really effective. I have tried out in Portland, doing comedy for 10 years. I was offered a lot of opportunities to audition for various commercials and things like that. There's a casting agent in Portland called Simon Max Hill. That's his name, and that's the company's name. And I was always getting offers, come down, try out for this commercial for the Oregon Lottery, try out for this thing, try out for this part. And those were ones where I would, dress up, I'd comb my hair, I would, wear the right shirt, I would memorize some lines, never got a job. The other day, these people from a design firm here in Portland called me up and were like, would you want to do this thing for Camelback, that water, the runners use. It's like a backpack of water with a tube, kind of a dune Mad Max looking system. Anyways, they have a new water bottle they needed somebody to do a man on the street video thing for. Would you want to do that? Would you want to try out for it? So I put in a video of me just interviewing myself about this water bottle. Didn't think once about it. Knew I wouldn't get it. Didn't even attach any hope I'll do it. It took me an hour to make the little reel, send it off. Didn't think about it. They call me up the next day. You want to do it? They're hiring you. They like what you did. A couple days later, did the shoot. My videographer friend, Brett Roberts, got him on board, got him paid. The whole thing was fun. Took 2 days. Paycheck, ka-ching. Boom. I don't know if it was good. I don't know if it was bad. They liked it. But I just, didn't attach any grasping towards it. I'm just staying in that zone. Podcast, if you want to support it, if you can and you want to, Trigger Method Patreon. jason-traeger-1 Venmo. If you like it, you like listening to it, you can't support it, tell a friend. That's my favorite kind of promotion. Thank you. I got to say, also, this bounce in my step, this animated feeling that I have in me, it's coming out of me. It's 70 degrees out, sunny. There's daffodils, crocuses, you know. It's in the air. Took my dog out for a 3-hour walk up on Mount Tabor, which is a beautiful park in Portland. The springtime thing is very much in effect. Spring has sprung, and so am I, like I said up top. Got a bunch of things booked, too. I'm going to be opening for Wolves of Glendale, comedy music group, on the 29th here in Portland at Holocene. I've got several local showcases. I've got a really cool... I've got a bunch of cool stuff coming up. So I'm booking things. That's feeling great. And I feel like I got a sign above my head that's like comedy guy. Maybe it's just, I don't know, maybe because of the weather changed, I'm seeing more people. And I was at my friends, John and CL, they opened up Secret Room is their comic zine and printing thing. They just got a storefront on Southeast Division. They had their opening for Secret Room, link in bio. Went to that opening. There's like two people there said to me, like, Jason Traeger, wow, I don't know you, but I've seen your comedy. Like, when? They're like, you know, 3 years ago. You know, like, again, 3 weeks ago, I didn't even think about comedy at all. And now it's like, oh, yeah, I did it. Nobody forgot. Some people might have forgot. Doesn't matter. I'm doing it again, and it feels like real. It is real. It's been interesting going to open mics. I went to one in Vancouver, Washington, which is just across the Columbia River from Portland, if you don't know the geography of this area. It's basically part of the larger Portland metro Vancouver area. It's like one big blob divided by the Columbia, which separates Washington from Oregon. And this room, everybody told me this room, the Underbar in Vancouver, has one of the best comedy rooms in the region now. It didn't exist when I was doing comedy before. So I thought I'm going to go up there and do it. It's a 3-minute open mic. Signed up online. I can see why it's a good room, just physically, the room itself. It's a basement room. It's a queer bar, you know, gay flag bar. So instantly, that's a cool vibe. It's got a cool psychedelic mural in there. It's warm looking. It's got the right kind of ceiling height. You know, if that place was packed, it was pretty thin when I went up very first. They gave me the bullet. That's called the bullet. Get doing the bullet. First comic. 3-minute open mic. I don't have any material I'm even working on. I mean, I am now, but like at that mic, I still didn't even have like a thing I was going to try. Because like when you're doing 3 minutes and you're doing just riffing and off the top of your head, it's 3 minutes is over before it starts. You want to work on a chunk of material. Try some joke writing. But I hadn't really begun the joke writing. So I just got up there and asked everyone there to pay me $5 for doing the mic. I said, Venmo me. Jason-Traeger-1 at Venmo. You know, I'd like to get paid to do this mic. And I said, please, and I mean the comics too. Like everybody, please pay me. It got a chuckle. That's about it. That's probably the only chuckle I got during my set. And then the light, I think he might have even lit me early. I don't know. Maybe not. But it's cool. You know, I liked also the fact that there was like 50 comics on the list and I didn't know a single name. Well, I knew like two names on it. It's a total turnover. You go away for 3 years. Everybody at that level there, the open mic level, it's all brand new people. It's awesome. Had two people ask me if it was my first open mic. I like that. Yeah, so it's fun to do those. It's fun to do these showcases. It's fun to see my old friends. It's fun to see my new friends. It's cool to have people who hadn't seen me in a long time do it. Who I've had so many nice conversations. People telling me how much they liked my comedy in the old days, and they're so glad to see me back at it. It's very encouraging. Oh, and by the way, back at that Cannon Beach Comedy Festival, I should say, when Eddie Pepitone watched me and I didn't care what he thought, we did talk backstage. We talked in the green room, and he was so nice, so supportive. We had a really nice little conversation. Love that guy. And he was amazing at that show. I love Eddie Pepitone. Link in bio. Yeah, so it's just been a very, very nice time. Excited about music, excited about comedy, looking forward to painting. In my front room where I paint, it's pretty inhospitable in the winter, and it's brightly lit in the summer. I love painting with the door open because I use oils, so you want to have some ventilation. So I see painting happening now, too. You're going to see more paintings coming out of me. I'm just embracing this thing of like whatever comes out of me. I don't mean everything that comes out of me, but all creative outputs that come out of me, I'm going to just share them with the world, you know? See what happens. Who cares? Let it happen. Natural with the seasons. Okay. So back to Paul Schlesinger. Yeah, Paul, amazing guy, talented human being, really have always... resonated. He has always we have always resonated with one another. We're on a journey of learning together, growing. And I love, a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, clown, this whole sort of opening up to just possibility in performance. That's really the kind of thing I'm working on right now, as I've mentioned, being just open to the flow, present for what is, not attached to outcomes. Truly, you know, so this was a good conversation for me to have. And I'm actually taking a clown intensive soon with a woman named Deanna Fleischer. So I'm into that, you know, like learning. I don't know what that's going to be like. I've never taken any comedy training other than, you know, out there on the stages doing it. So it's going to be interesting to see what that perspective is, what I might learn. And still I am learning, and still I am growing, growing and learning. What more can I be? Okay, that's about it for an intro. Yeah. Next episode is going to be the return of Chris Squire. We're going to be doing San Diego Punk again. I'm going to have a few San Diego Punk episodes coming up. But this episode, it's Los Angeles Clowning 2024 with my guest. Please enjoy my conversation with Paul Schlesinger. Paul.
Jason.
So good to have you back on the pod. What has it been, 3 years?
I think so. I try to do it every 3 years.
Trying to get you back. You know, we're coming back from a break, and I wanted to start where we started. You were episode number one, I think, was you and I talking. Wow. This is where the journey began.
Wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I'll have to check my notes, but I'm almost certain that it was you and I speaking. So let's start at the beginning of our relationship to refresh listeners, because maybe people didn't start at the beginning and they don't know the Paul Schlesinger, Jason Traeger journey. We met Portland Comedy.
Portland Comedy, 2014-15-ish, or I'd say.
You like preceded me, right? Because I mean, I started like 2010, 2011. Had you had already been doing stuff with Andrew Michon and Mikey Campman?
Yeah, I was quitting around that time.
That was when you were doing your first pause.
That was my first break. Yeah, pause.
And what had you, Mikey Campman, people might know him from After Hours podcast, maybe Andrew podcast
but outside.
Great podcast. So you guys had a thing in Portland called
Comedy is Okay.
Comedy is Okay. Yes. That was a great show.
And we did it at the Clinton Street Theater every month.
Clinton Street Theater, the oldest continuous movie theater west of the Mississippi. Did you know that?
I didn't.
than we would have met when I got started at some point. I remember I asked Andrew to do a show that I was doing because I'd seen him do comedy a few times, and he was like, can my friend Paul come along?
Yeah.
And I had seen you like maybe once or twice. I said,
yeah, I think I was probably dipping my toe back in.
Rooftop show, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. 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 It was at the Portland Printing. I don't know what the name of it is, but they make like zines and stuff that are like an independent publishing company.
It's still going strong. IPRC. It's a really cool.
That's great. It's a great. Yeah.
Yeah. So we met at that show and I was taken with you. You're so funny. You're such a sweet guy. And we've become over the years very, very good friends. You're one of my best friends.
Oh, yeah. Same.
Really? Yeah, same. But I put you in that tier. Like, you know, you listen to this podcast, listeners who are familiar with the Traeger method thing will hear me talking to friends I've known 40 years. You know,
yeah.
I'm in my 50s. You're in your what? Early 40s? Very early?
Late 30s. Late 30s.
The sunsetting 30s.
Yeah.
What are you, 39?
39.
Just closing in on that 40s when it all 40s. Gets better. It all gets better.
I believe it.
So I look at my tiers of friends in terms of time. I got friends going way back there, besties. But like I consider you in my new friend group, you know, people under 20 years.
Yeah.
But we're closing in on a decade. We're closing in on a decade now.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And of course, I don't put anybody in, you know, hierarchies, but you are one of my best friends, one of my new best friends.
A new best friend. Yeah, I agree.
I'm very grateful to have you in my life.
Oh, yeah. I'm very lucky as well.
We're both blessed. So you're no longer in Portland. You're in Los Angeles.
Yes.
What's life like today?
Literally today?
Well, it's only like 11 in the morning, so you probably haven't had much of a day so far. Let's go generally speaking. You're down in LA. You're doing comedy. You're doing your massage body work.
Mm-hmm.
Work. You've been doing that for many years. And you're not so much a stand-up now. You never were a straight stand-up in the past either. You always had music. Yeah. You played guitar. You do all kinds of experimental, interesting things. That's part of why I always gravitated towards what you did, because I'm also a freak.
Yeah. I think you and I are similar in the sense that we like a lot of different things, and we're a little above average in a lot of different things.
It's called being a genius. We're two geniuses.
Two geniuses.
That's how me and mother like to think of it.
Yeah. You know, my mom also would agree. We should all get them two together. A little praise circle. Praise square.
So I totally relate to you on that respect too. Absolutely. You do all kinds of things. You do them really well, and it's all coming together. It's always about to gel, you know. We're just gelling.
We're so close to figuring this
jello,
thing out.
We're that jello when it's in that really loose phase always.
We've been edging success from 30s on.
We're success edge lords. For sure. And I like being there. It's great. You know, I've come to a place recently in my life where I just went, you know, that's the way I am. It's like I'm in my 50s. This is how I operate. This idea that it would have been better to just be one way and only do this. And, you know, it's like, yeah, okay. In the capitalist model, that is the way, you know, do one thing forever, do it well. But it's just not my style. You know, it's not your style. Let's just be ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun to explore different things. And yeah, there's advantages and disadvantages to it.
Of course.
And monetary success is one of the disadvantages.
I like to think it just takes longer. That's always my hope.
Yeah.
The leprechaun
right around
approach.
The corner.
The rainbow. I'm chasing that rainbow.
Yeah, for me, 40s, it's going to be the one, and you, 60s is going to be.
Yeah, for me, it's the 60s. For you, it's the 40s. We're closing in on it. So you're in Los Angeles now, and you're kind of in the world of comedy you're in now. More so than stand-up is called clowning.
Yeah, I'm in the alternative LA clown scene.
Explain to the listeners who are not familiar with clowning what that means. And they might be picturing Bozo the Clown in a circus. What does clowning today mean?
Well, it's theatrical clowning, but it's definitely influenced by circus as well. But the clowning that I like, I think the easiest way I describe it is very silly comedy that connects and acknowledges the audience and changes based on that connection and response from the audience. A lot of people, it's kind of a amorphous thing. People kind of have all different definitions of it. And there is lots of subgenres in this tiny subgenre, but in LA, there's this really concentrated community happening of people trying to do clown stuff that is, yeah, like oftentimes there's costume, doesn't have to be costume. But yeah, you're just really silly. Sometimes there's some sects have a lot of nudity is a big part of it. Others have like emotional vulnerability, but yeah, I think just really silly comedy that's sensitive to the audience and changes based on that response is how I would describe what clown.
Could you name for me as many subgenres of clowning as you can think of?
Yeah, well, there's the idiot community here, which is like the idiot workshop, which is John Gilkey, who did some Cirque stuff. There's the clown school, which is this guy, David Bridell. There's the clown zoo people, which is kind of like some of them are very affiliated with the Elysian Theater. And they're like, that's like Natalie Palomides, Chad Damiani are some of the people in that. And then there's Clown Church, which is very more like emotional vulnerability and like lots of eye contact. And then I run a weekly clown jam, which is like, it's called Play Space. And that's like more newer comedians. But it's like very diverse group of like performers that just like are really like about building like a fun supportive community. I have a friend Natasha who does a thing called Soft Clown, and she kind of has her own little sub community. There's that Public Displays of Altadena, which are two people that were in the idiot thing and have now started their own theater in Altadena, and they all mix. There's more mixing happening with it, but they are kind of a little bit, so they have been a little bit more like there's these six, seven different like takes on clown. And then there's Phil Burgers, who does Dr. Brown, and he's had a lot of success doing like fringe shows and like in London, on the BBC, he had like a sketch show kind of clown show, and he's kind of like started with the clown zoo people. Now he's kind of doing his own thing. So I think that's all I can think of off the top of my head.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your idiots over here. You got your softies over here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of in culture, what you would see with like the people would know that would be kind of clown related, like with Jackass guys, would that be a sort of type of clown?
Yeah. Yeah. And actually I think, Natalie and Courtney Peroso is another Clown Zoo person who was actually in the most recent Jackass video. It's just like, I think they probably did some stunts, but they were only featured as like watching someone else do a stunt. But yeah, oh. I think Jackass is, yeah. Yeah, like I think the Clown Zoo crew are very like physical risks and nudity.
A lot of nudity.
Are big parts of their thing, but a lot more. I mean, it's not just that. I don't want to minimize, but that's, yeah, everyone has, yeah, a little bit varied take on it.
Yeah, it sets it apart from just the world of improv or stand-up. You don't see a lot of nude improv shows.
No.
You drop your pants, you become a clown.
Yeah, and I'd say, I mean, I don't know, this will probably not maybe even make people more like confused, but in Portland there used to be like kind of three different improv theaters. There was like Brody, sure. And there was Curious Comedy, and then kind of Siren was sort of newer, but like they were pretty like you only did one at one theater. You weren't like, no one would go to different theaters, like you picked a theater and you would only go to it. And then Kickstand happened. I think that kind of meshed the community a little bit more. And I think LA is now more in the process of meshing, but again, that's maybe pretty fringe niche reference. Also Portland improv from whatever 2010 to like this, 2016.
This podcast is all about minutia. We love the fine details. Yeah. We're telling a story of culture here. So, you know,
yeah.
I want to hear about Portland improv 2009 to 2010.
Yeah, you know?
Who were the players? Yeah, you were also one of the comics who did improv as well as stand-up.
Yeah, well, I started improv pretty late because I think I started stand-up, and what I liked about stand-up was that it was like you teach yourself And I think there's almost an adversarial relationship that stand-ups have with taking stand-up classes, which I don't think is necessarily wrong, because I think stand-up is like very much like you do it and you receive the information. And I think that structure of like just doing stand-up is pretty, you can pretty much grasp it by going to watch a stand-up show. You kind of like can figure out, it's like talking and saying something maybe unexpected, or I mean there's subgenres of stand-up too, but
sure.
but like with something like improv, you kind of do need a little bit more like train, you need someone to kind of walk you through the process a little bit that has a little more experience. And I think especially with clowning also, you need someone to kind of like help guide you of like to learn the language or learn like areas that there are points to like connect or make a new choice. You need a vocabulary. Unfortunately, it's kind of an expense. There's a lot of expensive classes you have to take, but that's one thing about PlaySpace that I'm really proud of, is it's a free event and we bring in guest directors about once a month. A guest director, like a clown teacher, basically runs a free clown class so people can learn stuff about, you know, like fixed point or just the idea of like being vulnerable and looking at people, like make it like making a dumb decision and the audience doesn't like it. In clown, that's not a bad thing. You make a big bad choice and then the audience says we don't like that, and then you have lots of options actually after that. And actually this happens a lot in stand-up, like new people in stand-up especially, you can tell when they're new and when they apologize for their jokes or something doesn't go well. Like that's a very clown thing of like, it's like, hey, I'm sorry, I'm new at this, you know, I'm not good. But that's a very clown thing to just acknowledge what's actually happening. Like I can tell you guys didn't like what I did, but no problem, I have a ton more stuff that I can do. Even if you don't actually have stuff, in a clown you're kind of like, one take on it is that you're a constant loser with lots of optimism of like, I can fix this. and yeah, and it takes a long time to actually get to a point where that's really like you can keep that going for an hour. I think one kind of like clown goal is like a solo an hour long solo show. You play a character, or you know you have many characters or whatever, and you make big choices and maybe they don't work, and then you just go, hey, no problem, I got a ton of other stuff. Even if you don't, and you just keep going and you keep the audience keeps like you keep connected with them and you keep them wanting to be like, oh, we still want to support this person. And it can be challenging, but that's one goal of clown.
Man, that is super interesting. I definitely want to talk with you more about that. I wanted to ask you before I forget, what you mentioned fixed point, what's that?
Oh, fixed point is just like just you hold like a suspended state, or like I also like sometimes called like tableaus. Tableaus are more in a group usually, but like you just like hold a beautiful stage picture and just like know that that's like like trying to create beauty is like another thing of clown, of like the idea of like this person who's not kind of, and I think it's tricky because sometimes people like a compliment in clown is like, oh, you're such an idiot, like that was so dumb, is a huge compliment. Like so it can be a little confusing I think to people outside of that, but like when someone like in the LA clown scene, at least it was like, man, that was so dumb, you are such an idiot, that's like, oh man, that person really gave me a huge compliment.
You are a fucking moron.
yeah no, you're so dumb.
Yeah, well, it's interesting what you were just saying, because I just returned to stand-up comedy last weekend. Friday, and I did the Helium open mic last night with all my old friends, and it happened just as organically as when I stopped doing comedy, which was just before COVID. I just didn't make any decision. I just stopped doing it. And then COVID hit and never went back and never even thought about it. I'll probably talk about this in depth in an intro or something. So I probably don't need to retell this a million times. But long story short, I went down to Salem to do a show with Hutch playing music, because I've written all these songs and I've got my guitar. I'm doing finger picking. The lineup was stacked in such a, it was a night of comedy and music. And so there was two comics up front and then three singer-songwriters after that. And the crowd there, though, was at this comedy venue in Salem, Oregon, the Infinity Room. And the crowd was so there to see comedy. I could just see it, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, they do not want three singer-songwriters in a row at this point in the show. I'm in the middle of the two, of Hutch and Andrew. Every part of my body said, just don't touch the guitar unless you have to. Just go up there. And I have not written or thought of doing stand-up, not at all, in 3 years. It was awesome. I did a half hour clown style, you know.
There's no failure.
There's no, just I own it so much. I love doing this. I'm having a great time. Whatever happens, it's going to be fine. I'll talk to them. You know, just no fear. Fly without a net. I just caught the fire that simply, just super organically. Coming back to it, I've set a goal already, which is don't write. Try not to write.
Mm-hmm.
Like material will form and things will be repeated, I'm sure. But make every effort not to do that if you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's my mission. And I'm just going to proceed like that.
Yeah. I think what I'm kind of like reflecting back on of like just having seen you do a lot of comedy, I think you are, you do like, it's, that's a very clown thing to be sensitive to what the audience wants, because usually the audience wants something from us and they don't really know sometimes what they want until we do it. And it sounds like you figured it out. So that's like, that's a really magical moment that I really love in clown, when like, we just see someone comes on stage and sometimes that person comes on stage and we just want them to leave right away.
Yes.
Like, and like some people could literally maybe probably make a career of just walking on stage. No one wants you to be there. And they just, they walk up to the mic and then leave.
Like, and everybody's happy. Anything.
And everyone, and then clap, and then they come back and we go, no, 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 we don't want you. And then they leave. And that could be, I mean, that could be an hour show of just someone threatening to do stand up. I think, is this show right there. And yeah, I do think, and yeah, I think you are very like verbally playful in your stand up, and I think it would be great for you to take some clown. There is like there's a clown teacher up in Portland. Ann Zander teaches clown class. I don't know if you've ever done some stuff with Phil. She does stuff at Kickstand, but she's kind of doing her own thing a little bit.
I'd love to do that.
I think that would be great for you. And I would say also I think it's like, it just made me think of a Bill Hicks quote, which is, you know, a classic stand up. But he said, like material is for when the show isn't going well. So like, it's nice to have something in the bank of like, okay. Yes. Cause you know, every now and then someone does, you're just not going to connect on every night. I mean, maybe you get to the point you can, but it is nice to have some stuff like banked away of like, okay, this doesn't work, but I have this big, beautiful moment that I can create in like break in case of emergency. And maybe that doesn't work. And then maybe that can lead to a more beautiful moment. So I think I like the spirit of what you're saying of like that playfulness and like that openness to be like, let's explore what happened in this moment. But I also think that you can increase that playfulness just by like, it's like working out, creating material.
Exactly.
Outside of it, and then it's like I have this in case I'm not hitting with the audience this night.
Yeah, I didn't mean to imply that I was going to always never have any material. I know that it will be written and it will come, but I just mean to flip it. The normal stand-up, if somebody's starting out, you know, you want to write material and work it out on stage, but I'm going just the opposite direction where it's like try not to do that as long as you can, and things will come, and they will come super totally naturally. And then, yeah, of course, all my old chops of honing and writing and replacing words and, you know, tension and release and all that, it's all going to be in there. And yeah, free jazz is better for knowing.
Yeah, you're basically the John Coltrane of comedy.
That's what I'm getting at. And I appreciate you acknowledging that. It helps me to know that you also recognize that.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was just reading a text your mom sent me about you.
No, but I love that. And I love also the idea of learning, you know, like you were talking about stand-up classes and things and people having issues with that. Like, oh, you don't do that. You know, you learn it in the stages. It's the only place. And it's like, yeah, ultimately, yes, it's true. But, you know, anywhere you can get input and why not take it? Why not? You know, I guess that's part of my life at this point, too, is I've really rediscovered just a joy of learning in general.
Learning
about guitar, going back and figuring out all the stuff that I didn't know about circle of fifths and scales and modes and all that stuff that YouTube can teach you now.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes guitar better and everything's better to learn all that stuff. And the punk rock damage of, like, you know, do it all yourself, learn it in the streets, learn it in the sheets.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
No. And so like the idea of going and taking, you know, classes from Ann Zander, or, you know, just talking with her about clowning, it's like, yeah, it's just more stuff to work with, more information to put in your quiver.
Yeah, I think something that came up for me through this is that maybe it's not this way anymore, but I do think that, you know, there is kind of like a, like, we're not theater, like, yeah, like time. It's like, especially, you know, the more Joe Rogan, like, what more like kind of edgelord comedy is like more like, you know, like, yeah, you do stand up only in like, there's no theater to it. It's just like, it's just telling truth.
Nuts and bolts truth.
Yeah. Nuts and bolts truth. And I think, yeah, it's like, it's just like almost like a fundamentalism that's kind of come out of this extreme literalism that happens, that like, where it just like, it loses. I don't know if this is true. Someone just said this in a class, but apparently there's like a social laugh and then like a uncontrollable laugh. Mm. I don't know if this, I mean, who knows if this is actually true or not, but no, I like the idea that.
I can see that.
Of like where it's like, there's the laugh of like, ha ha ha, I recognize this is true, or you know, polite laughter. I actually think there's probably a ton more than just two laughs, but I do think the idea of like, what I really like about clown is like, it really does get to this, like the laughter is like really communal in the crowd experience, and you're all together and be like, I can't believe this person is doing this.
That's
is like
the laughter, like, I love that. That's the animal laughter.
Yeah. I'm just like, oh my God, this person is really out there. They're really not. Yeah. They're really without a net right now, or that live, you feel that liveness to it is energy. What I really like about clown. Yeah. That. And I think that's what's great about, like, yeah, not relying on only prepared material, but knowing that stuff. And actually, I mean, the more you do it, you do realize how you can write the improvised moments can actually become written, but it's still, there always is just like, I just love finding more of that element of like, oh, I didn't expect this to happen. And like, let's go, let's make more of that happen.
Yes.
Versus like, I wrote this to tell the truth about whatever, like about Tinder or even this, or what I think of religion or whatever. Like, it can be a serious topic, but to me, there's a lot of theatrical tools that like can help make a more dynamic experience, I think. And I regret not learning like improv earlier, the clown thing I only found out in LA when I saw Natalie Palamida's show, Nate. And I was like, well, what is this? She had an audience member sign a waiver and then she wrestled him. And, you know, yeah. And she's like, she's in drag as a man, but, you know, her chest is out, but she has chest hair painted over her body.
Yes.
And she has like this wig on. And I'm just like, what is this? She's wrestling people. She has audience member playing her best friend that she makes do this crazy handshake over and over with. And it was just like, oh wow, this is so exciting. And like, yeah, and the audience, I think like thinking of the audience as a member of like the experience, it really is is a fun way of thinking of like live performance of like, what is the audience perspective of this? And how can they actually maybe be a part of this, and what might they bring that I wouldn't even expect as a performer? And how can I like play that or make I personally like when audience members are the hero, are set up to be a hero, like how can I make this person look the best version of themselves? And then the audience goes, oh, that's one of us,
it's us,
one
yeah.
of us, it's us, and we're the hero, and maybe I could be the hero next, is like a fun experience. Like I don't know, I've always really like been drawn to performance, but I like whenever I was like watching like a play as a kid or something, like we'd go to like a theater shows as a kid for school or something. I was just like, man, I want to be up there. Like, I hope they pull me up there. You know, it's like a written performance that there's no room for me to be on stage, but I really wanted to be up there as a kid.
You're watching the Christmas Carol play at Christmas. Maybe they'll pull me up and I could be
a, I don't Tiny know, Tim. A background dancer at least.
Yeah, no, well, yeah, you're a performer. You had that urge. Well, one thing that popped in my mind was Andy Kaufman. Like, he seems to be one of the touchstones going back. I mean, obviously, you go back to experimental theater, probably in Paris in 1930. There was some Bauhaus thing that was, you know, breaking the fourth wall. 60s you know, the Cockettes and San Francisco experimental theater nudity and all that stuff. There's this lineage. But Andy Kaufman, you know, when I think of him as a, he seemed to have all those elements of clown in him in a, you know, genius way.
Yeah. And it's fun. And I think sometimes confusing the audience is fun. And like, yeah, like how do you confuse the audience, but also elevate their experiences? Like the next question to ask for that, because that was something that was like so outside of the realm of anyone doing what he was doing, I think, at the time of like he's wrestling women and he's like getting people to not like him. Yeah. But like, it is sometimes fun to boo people. I love booing people at a show. Like that's kind of a LA clown thing of like someone that makes a really bad, one of your friends makes a really bad mistake and you boo them. I mean, yeah. I do. And it's fun to boo people, be like, oh, boo, you always do that move, or you always enter the stage with that look, that specific look. And I just want to boo you. But it's like, the boo is like actually an encouraging boo. And it's fun to boo people as an audience, because that also gives that person a chance to maybe redeem themselves or to intensify the like, okay, well, I'm gonna actually say something really nasty that's gonna get me in more trouble. And then that will set up maybe another performer to do something that like stops that person, then they're the hero, or the audience gets a chance to be the hero. And yeah, it's just fun. It just puts you in like a childish state of like, I like this person, I don't like this person, and I get to express that, and like I get to hear that person acknowledging my expression, and it feels like validating to be heard.
Oh man, absolutely. And when you just use the word childlike, that's something that I think about a lot, is getting people into that childlike playful state of being, of thinking and feeling.
Yeah. I'm listening to this audiobook it's a book, but I'm listening to the audiobook version by this woman, Lisa Feldman Barrett, called How Emotions Are Made. Her view of like emotions, and her like research has shown that the kind of traditional view of emotions, that emotions are in the face and that there's universal emotions. She's actually found through her research that that's actually not true.
What is she found?
That it's cultural. And that emotions are really just concepts of meaning that we give to bodily sensations that something happens around. And I think that there's something about that childlike state of when you're still learning about the world and there's like, I don't know how I feel about this, or like that made me feel like maybe a pit in my stomach. But that's the thing, is like, it's the same physical sense of like, oh, I have a pit in my stomach, and people can describe that as anxiety, or someone can describe it as excitement. And she hasn't found that there's these fingerprints of emotion that they kind of have taught that there are in the brain, that that's actually not the case, but that it's very it's cultural. The sense that there's an imprint in our brain is that we have this wiring, that we do wire the world based on our surroundings. So we kind of do, like, you know, like we see happiness and smiling is, you know, a part here, but like someone from in the book, they're talking about someone from Russia talking about how much their face hurt from having to smile all the time, because, you know, in America we're a very smile everything's okay culture, or, you know, that's a social kind of and it's not like emotions aren't real, but it's just they're concepts that are very early learned. She talked about emotional granularity, so like learning that pin in my stomach doesn't mean just anxiety or depression. It could mean maybe I'm hungry, or which is, I'm not sure if she'd classify that as an emotion, but like, or maybe like it's more complicated, like maybe I have like languishing or something, versus like I'm depressed, I'm languishing, I'm sad. Like having that vocabulary actually is helpful for us, because we have more concepts to pull from. But this search for like, what's the fingerprint, what's the facial recognition of like someone that's sad or happy, is actually really not a reality. There's not a universal connection of face and emotion. And like, even one of the examples that I gave of like judges got way more lenient in their sentencing after lunch. So like right before lunch, you're in court, the judge is going to be a lot harsher on you than after they have their lunch and they're well fed, because they have this pang in themselves, and it's easy to project on the world, be like, well, this guy or woman or you know, them is a bad person and they must be punished for this. Really, the judge is hungry. And, you know, they just needed a snack and maybe they could view the world in a little bit. She talks about body regulation or like I don't remember the exact term of it, but like body budgeting, like the reserves of energy that we do have in our body. And sometimes we make more emotional choices when we're like in a deficit than like a surplus. You know, it's easier to be like, that person cut me off, they're a fucking asshole, when you're hungry and you're tired, but you just had a massage, a good meal, and you're driving home in LA traffic. I've had that experience where I had a really great massage driving in LA traffic. And I'm like, this isn't so bad. You know, it's the same traffic. It's just my body budget is in a different, it's in a surplus after getting a massage. And yeah, after 20, 40 hour, then yeah, I kind of am back to this fuckers, but it's a lot more flexible than we think. And that kind of view of like, they call it like essentialism, like that there is like this God imprint of like anger or sadness. Really not the case, because, you know, sometimes someone's angry and they smile at you and then they go, okay, I'm gonna kill your dog, you know, or do something insane, you know, whatever, and you don't realize it until the crazy thing happens. So a book I'd recommend for sure.
Oh, to everyone. God, I have to read that, and I'll have the link in show notes. I hope this conversation is as good for listeners as it is for me, because what you're talking about is all this stuff is exactly what I've been thinking about. I guess it all goes in with mindfulness, meditation, living in the moment, having the observer and you're in it, but you're also observing it from a place of neutral calm, you know?
Yeah.
Because the emotions always come. You can get as mindful as any, you know, 90 years on a pillow. You're still going to have stuff come up. It's just your reaction to it, your relationship to it. And I've been doing that a lot in life, especially with this little time. I mean, I'm brand new back to stand-up. But prior to that, I was thinking a lot about playing music live, because I've spent a couple years doing a lot of woodshedding, playing guitar in bed, you know, writing songs, learning how to finger pick, stuff like that. And it's a real different thing when you start contemplating taking it out there. You know, the fingers turn to rubber, the voice suddenly, you know, all that kind of stuff. So fear naturally comes up, anxiety, thinking about it. And now that I'm doing stand-up, you know, you're always playing with that.
Yeah.
But what I've been doing is I get that feeling of butterflies, nerves, tightening up, all the somatic things that might come up when you consider something out of the comfort zone. And and I've been doing that exact thing, saying, okay, I could look at this as an unpleasant thing. It's nerves. It could easily look at that same somatic feel and judge it that way. But instead, I just go, it's exciting. This is an indication that you're doing something interesting. Whether it's this or that, it's just energy. You're creating energy. That's not a bad thing. It's good for you. And that alone, just making that thing of saying to yourself, this is fun. Another thing that came up when you were talking is that thing about reading people, the projecting onto people. You know, you always have a tendency when you're performing or whatever to do that. And in life, of course, we're always doing that. You know, you're projecting onto people. You see what they think, what they feel. I can't think of how many times doing stand-up, how many times it has happened to me that I've noticed a group or a person with that kind of stone face thing, not laughing, just watching. And then after the show, they come up to me and they're like, that was so great. That was just what I needed. Yeah. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Accept, let it go, or have fun with it, but don't let it freak you. And
yeah, well,
everybody's on a spectrum of emotions at all times and engagement. Yeah. We all have our styles. And so to like try and hold everybody to some idealized human set of reactions is just folly.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny it makes me think of how we both talk about our supportive mothers.
Yes.
And I notice myself when I'm watching other performers, not always, sometimes I will be very stone. If it's someone I don't maybe like, you know, I'll be extra hard on them. But for the most part, I feel like I'm a pretty generous person as an audience member. So like, I'll try to smile or like laugh at something, even if it's, you know, like not really crushing with me. And so when people don't extend that back to me, I automatically will jump to, oh, they hate me, you know, or like they're doing the thing that I do, which is like I'm icing someone out because I don't maybe like them. And so your mind is like a prediction machine, and you predict, you know your own experience so well that you just predict everyone else's like you. And really, we're actually not that great at predicting other people's emotional state, as evident by that example that you just gave of like, yeah, someone's, yeah, just stone face, arms crossed, and then they come up to you after the show. Yeah, that was awesome, man. I love that. Thank you so much. And you're like, oh, what? You couldn't smile? Like, you're killing me. I kept looking over at you with your arms crossed, and it seemed like you were hating me, but that was, yeah, you're not mapping out that you need to be there present for someone because maybe performing isn't part of your experience, or maybe you haven't had people support you in the way that I've had people support me. So everyone has different experience.
The other thing with stand-up, often depending on where you're performing, a lot of times you're in bright lights and you can really barely see anybody. If there's mm-hmm. a large crowd, mm-hmm. you got 100 people that are totally obscured. So you're yeah. listening for cues of energy that are subtle sounds and rumbles and grumbles, and there's different kinds of silences. You know, I've always worked in a way where I have pretty long pauses for a stand-up, you know, and pretty mm-hmm. long, pretty open spaces. And I can tell when everybody's kind of leaning forward with a smile on their face, or when they're like looking at each other, shaking their heads, you know what yeah. I mean? And that's another interesting level that you work with crowds and people, is just pure vibes.
Well, and that's a big thing for clown, actually, is a lot of people in clown perform with house lights up. Mm. So, and you know, usually the stage lights are actually still pretty overwhelming, that it is difficult to look at. But, you know, ideally you want to be connecting. I just took a workshop and the person was talking about seeing mm-hmm. and you connect with the person's eyes and you see them seeing you see them, and you can share this moment of infinity with them, and then you don't have to hang there forever, and it's not about getting lost in that, but it's just like acknowledging that, like, hey, isn't this crazy? That I mean, to me I like it because it makes me think of just the infinity and nothingness at the same time, but it might be different for someone else. But just sharing that brief moment with someone with like, yeah, that eye connection, and then yeah, and you move on to the next person.
Oh, absolutely. The power of looking into someone's eyes, or looking at least looking out their eyes full of light and fire. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the different, like I was at the open mic last night. So you see this variety, you see people who've done stand up for, you know, towards the end of the mic at Helium, you know, the people that work at the club, done it for 10, 15, 20 years. And then you see all the people up top who are maybe the first time, third time, uh-huh. or first year, second year. And that energy where they're, you know, you're sort of pacing back and forth, you're looking at the ground, you're you know, glancing around. It's just such a different vibe that everybody picks up on.
Yeah.
And it can be fine, but it's also very much taken into account, the whole package.
Yeah. But it's also interesting because, like, I think a great thing, like, and what we're talking about with like clown teaching is, or just in general, all lessons in life, is the opposite is always true, usually. Mm-hmm. So like Mitch Hedberg pretty much performed looking down at his feet, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And is one of the greatest stand-ups of all time.
Right.
And probably will be forever, at least in my opinion, or, you know, as long as I'm alive. And like, so it's like, it's not like an essential thing, but it's just like, it's nice to have the option. So yes. Like, yeah, like having a choice, not being stuck in habitual action of I only have to look at the audience. It's sometimes okay to have a personal private moment with yourself on stage, but then come back to us, or I think, but you know, that's my belief, but it could be wrong for someone else.
Absolutely, man. That's the greatest thing, is to be aware that it's all available to you.
Yeah.
I saw Mitch Hedberg once.
Oh, really?
He was actually one of the people that got me into wanting to do stand-up in my first pass at it.
Whoa. When was that?
It was in Olympia in probably 1998 or 99. Or what year did he die? Do you know? Early 2000s, like 2004 early or 2000, something. Yeah. There was this little club in downtown Olympia on 4th Avenue. I think it was just a comedy club, maybe a nightclub disco type thing. It wasn't a band place. I don't remember ever seeing bands play there. but Fish Harbor, yeah. That one-liners.
Yeah.
And that's what got me to go up to Seattle and do an open mic. Cause I had a little comedy 2 or 3 years there at the turn of the millennium. But that was, comedy was such a different world then.
Yeah. What an amazing show though. Great lineup.
Oh my, yeah, no, looking back, of course you go, how fucking cool, especially, you know, Mitch Hedberg's not around anymore. Dude, I saw Stephen Wilbur. He closed out the show last night. The brilliant Stephen Wilbur, comedian.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He did a whole bunch of one-liners that were so funny.
Oh, awesome.
It's so refreshing to see and remember, oh yeah, man, I can do this freeform shit with no material. I can write one-liners. I could, you know. And then also getting to the future, it's like, I can have a guitar, play songs.
I think I want to see physical comedy from you also.
Oh man, all the way. I love that stuff. It's basically do all the stuff you do at home when I'm trying to like make Lily laugh.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
So tell me about clown poems, internet presences that people can watch. Like what would people see if they checked out your clown poems Instagram work?
Yeah, so clown poems is a project that I have, the last one I filmed was in December and I still haven't edited it yet. I'm kind of, you know, I mean, ebbs and flows and creative endeavors is kind of something we started talking with, and I'm kind of in an ebb state of that, I have a 360 camera. So it's a camera with two lenses on each side and it shoots basically everything around you. So it shoots like fisheye lens, 180 degrees on both sides. And then you can go shoot it and then select later on what you want to focus on through an app. Area you want the camera to focus on. So you can zoom in on stuff. You can pull it out and get that world effect where it looks like someone's walking on the world. And I have been putting those on clowns in LA. I have a head mount. So it's like basically like a GoPro, but with two lenses. And we devise a little 1 to 3 minute piece in the moment and we shoot it. And then I score it to music and I release them online, and they're not super funny, but they're very interesting. I think they're visually interesting. Play Space is the weekly clown jam that I run at the Elysian Theater every Wednesday from 5 to 7. And it's a free event and you come and you get 2 minutes of stage time, sometimes 1.5 minutes to 2 minutes. And you get gonged off. I run it with my friend, Rachel Ho. You get 2 minutes and you get gonged off. And then after everyone goes, then we do ensemble time. So we get people up, you get a prompt, and sometimes you'll enter the music and we usually encourage silent ensemble work. But usually, you know, with clown, it's always, you know, break the rules, you know, don't follow the rules until they don't serve you anymore. So oftentimes people start talking and that'll get a laugh. Or from running Play Space, it really has opened my interest in organizing people and like how getting people to play together. And so kind of clown poems was a way of doing that where I was never in any of them. I just kind of like set people up and kind of direct and co-devise. And so that I will finish the video I have with some Denver clowns. I was in Denver and I filmed that with them, but I don't know if I'm going to continue doing it or not. I also just started a live show called The Flying Cockroach.
I was going to ask you about that next. Tell us about that.
So basically I got a cockroach costume from Goodwill on Halloween. There's like a nice like felty cockroach costume that you can slide over yourself and has big like foam in like stuffing ear antlers, and it's a pretty funny costume. And you know, with clown, it's like, for me, I was like, oh, this is enough for a show. And so I didn't want to do just a solo show because with the Play Space, I'm just, yeah, I am interested in working with other people and like trying to highlight other people, like making other people look good. And so we in 4 weeks devised a hour long show that had like started with the solo part where I turn into a cockroach And then there's this huge play. I run a dress rehearsal as a cockroach for this made up play musical called The President's Jewels. I did it. And I think it went very well, but subjectively it went okay. And it's probably the hardest I've ever worked on something. Like, I think the funny stuff I've done, I think, is just how hard I've committed or tried stuff and it not working is the funniest stuff I've ever done. And so, like, I'm not sure if you remember, but for about 4 to 7 months in Portland, I wore only blue every
blue
day.
Blue prints.
I wore only blue for 4 to 7 months in Portland, and I would call myself the Blue Prince on stage. I would get the audience to chant, "Go Blue Prince, go Blue Prince." And I would, you know, do a little, like, my arms up in the air and a little, like, hip gyration. I've always you know, like, the earliest moment, I had, like, one music teacher in third grade who would let me, I don't know why she did, but she was, like, probably one of the most supportive teachers I've ever had. But she would let me, at the end of music class, entertain the class for 10 minutes. She was like, "Let's let Paul do his thing for 10 minutes. Like, I don't know why. Like,
did you have a hyperactive attention deficit disorder?
I do have ADD, but, like, I was pretty, like, I had it in pretty control. Like, it's gotten worse as I've aged.
She just saw the performer in you.
But she just saw the performer, and that was the only year we did musicals every year. Like, but it was mostly everyone, like performances for music, but it was mostly everyone in the stands just singing standards or whatever, like some, like, musical standards. But this, the year of the third grade teacher, or maybe it was third or fourth grade, we had, like, an actual play, and I was one of the stars of the play also, in that she cast me as one of the stars. I played, like, a Barney Fife type character who was, like, trying to solve this mystery of, like, I don't know, some mystery happened in the school. But she cast me in that, and she also would let me perform. I have vague memories of it now, but, like, I just remember, like, just making people laugh, and it was so clown of just, like, I'll do whatever you want me to do, basically, like, whatever you guys want me to do. It's probably a lot of just Jim Carrey impressions at that point, because that's when he was really popping off. But
genius.
And then in LA, like, yeah, like, getting the audience to chant along and dance is a very clown thing. Through, like, I kind of was able to develop a little bit, but I kind of just got stuck because I didn't have like those guideposts that you kind of can get in clown classes of, like, okay, here's this point and here's where you can go from there. I kind of just got there. Okay, I got everyone chanting, "Go Blue Prince, go Blue Prince." And then I just kind of just go back into regular stand up or
inexplicable.
Yeah, just a huge energy shift to, like, a totally different energy shift. Like, yeah, because I would also, like when doing guitar, like, I would play, like, songs, and then I get a lot of laughs in moments of silence is, like, yeah. I feel like I'd get that, but I didn't realize that, like, I could keep going with that. I would just get maybe where, like, in clown, you learn that vulnerability of, like, okay, I'm going to take even now a bigger risk or something, or maybe I'll just tell you something very emotionally true and bare my soul, and then go back into something is a one way of doing it. But I just kind of would then get defensive. I'd be embarrassed.
Yes.
Which is okay. It's okay to be embarrassed, but when you get defensive, and especially if someone's arms crossed looking at you, maybe they're having the time of their lives, but their arms are crossed and they have what appears to be a blank face, I would get defensive and I'd be like, "Oh, fuck this person," you know.
I've,
like,
seen you. I've seen you do that turn.
Yeah, because
which can be funny, you know. But yeah,
it can be funny. But it's like that that it's the stand up. Like, it's not. There was, like, a moment where there's so many videos of, like, comedian destroys heckler.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the stand up mentality of, like, it's almost an antagonistic relationship to the audience of, like, you're here to listen to my worldview, And like this truth that I got from the mountaintop from God is what I'm delivering to you. And if you interrupt me, I'm going to like destroy you. Whereas like my view of performance is like, you interrupt me. Thank you. Thank you so much for interrupting me. Let's make you look, let's showcase what is actually best and most beautiful about you. And maybe what's most beautiful about all of us will help rise to the top and we can celebrate you. And then we can send you back to your seat and you can enjoy the rest of the show. And we can then make someone else the most beautiful version of themselves. And we can just connect through that versus you're dead. You know, like I hate, so anyways, yeah. So yeah, I do these big projects. I do these big projects. I invest so much of myself in it. And then I had a pretty big emotion, what my friend called a vulnerability hangover after this last show. Mm-hmm. Cause I did another thing I did for this Flying Cockroach show, to jump back to that. I had a bit where I start out the show, a pre-show, saying the show hasn't started, a little bit about that, da da da, and then I go, okay, and then I kind of joke that I'm gonna take a nap and the show starts in a dream, and then I run backstage and I take off all my clothes and I come back out in a diaper, because a diaper bit I've done before, and I did that. And but also the thing that's funny about that is I'm now in the preparing for this moment, I've gotten in the best shape I've ever been in my life.
I've always been in pretty good shape though. You're always fit. You're a very tall, physically fit guy, but now you're ripped.
Yeah, I'm not like ripped, but I'm like, you know, like I've been doing like kettlebell workouts. I got this like kettlebell workout, and I was doing like hour 20 minute workouts 5 days a week to get
yeah,
like
I used your kettlebells when we stayed with you.
Yeah, and then on top of working on the show, I was working 3 to 5 hours a day on the show. We did 4 rehearsals, and I was just like, "This is the show. I'm working out like crazy." And then I did it, and it was funny because the context of the diaper and the stand up, that is shocking. But in the context of clown, people kind of expect nudity in LA, at least.
Take off the diaper.
Well, yeah. I think it was the feedback I got from the audience was, I think, put your clothes back on, please. I think that's what they want. I think they wanted me to put my clothes back on. But it's hard in the moment when you're so committed, when you've spent so much time working on this, that like I didn't have the I did everything for the show. I lost about $500. I lost about $500.
You contributed $500 to the art scene.
I catered the show. Also, like I bought all the performers. Like I catered, I live directed, I ran my own tech during the show. Also, I was running the tech. I was starring in the show. Also, by the time the show started, I was actually pretty exhausted because it was an entire month of the most intense, concentrated effort I've ever done. And I feel like some people I invited, part of the me getting in good shape was to be like, hey, look at this. And people didn't want that. And I think I maybe isolated some people in my life because I think that they thought that I don't know. I need to check in with some people. But,
maybe you're reading into it, but maybe you're right.
Yeah, maybe this is my projection. But I do think, yeah, I think there is some truth to it. Also, the emotional granularity of maybe there's some element of that. So there are some people I need to reach out with because I think that they maybe felt like a little bit like confronted by my awesome body. But I worked so hard. I worked so hard on it, and it was just okay. But I've never worked so hard in my life, and just for it just to be just okay, that was serviceable. It like was kind of devastating.
It was a little bit of a Well, on Instagram you posted a thing that says pillars of the clown community are all raving, and then the reviews below says, that sounds kind of weird and cool. Let me know next time you do one. I would love a free ticket, Chad Damiani. Yes. Send me an email with information, Jet Everett. Sounds awesome. I'm teaching a class that night, Kevin.
Yeah. And none of those people came.
They didn't come. Those
people showed up. Yeah. And like, I ended up giving half of the audience was comps. And again, yeah. And it was some people that I've done like tech for their open mic and their standups. And I think they probably felt a little affronted by like, okay, like, cause they've only known me doing tech for them. And like, yeah, the show wasn't that funny, but it was like, I mean, it was a huge production. There were 8 original songs. I did all the music too. It was a huge accomplishment that went okay.
Yeah. Man, that's stuff though, man. You learn so much. And
oh, yeah.
Doing okay it's part of the process. It's part of it.
Oh, but man, I was so devoted, like so devoted. And I feel great because actually through the workouts that I've done, and my partner Lindy has actually been I'm so blessed to have her in my life. I want to give a quick shout out to Lindy.
She's awesome.
She works out like 5 days a week and she's never pushed, like she goes to a workout class. She's never pushed me to be like, oh, you have to work out because I work out. But like, I've seen just like her effort to like work out and make herself better. And then also just like, she was my sounding board for so much of this, and she's so fucking sweet. She would just be like, yeah, that sounds good. Like, oh yeah, that's great. Like, just like, to such terrible ideas that like, she must be so tired of hearing me just like, okay, you know. And then the president's singing about their jewels and they're throwing jewels to the audience, and I'm sure it sounds insane, but she's just like, oh yeah, babe, that sounds great. Like, I'm so blessed to have her just like encouragement and support. And you know, like I tell people it went okay, and she goes, it went awesome. It was so good. You should have been there. Like, you know, she's like, she got people to come to it. Like, she's like very much like, yeah, come support Paul. Like, she's very direct, and like, I'm so thankful to have her in my life. But it is but through that workout stuff, there is a point where it's like, I want to give up. I want to stop. I want to cry, or you know, this is too hard. But you keep going. And you can, and that can develop into like, that develops into every area of your life of like, oh yes, like I can keep going. And so I do think that I really do encourage lifting weights is like, I do kettlebells. It really is an impactful thing in life. It not so much about like, who cares what you actually look like, just the ability to like lift weights hard for an hour, that really will impact your life in a positive way.
Well, you know, it's also a perfect like physical metaphor for all the stuff we're talking about. You know, when you lift weights, you're working with resistance. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you do comedy, you work with resistance.
Yeah.
And the resistance in both cases makes you stronger. And when you produce art and you present it to the world in a selfless way, you put all yourself into it, you don't know what it's going to be. That you're working with also. Resistance on every level at every point is a product of somebody fighting through resistance and hopefully always becoming stronger. I mean, whatever, I always see the future as the rainbow, you know, that like we're talking about at the top, you know, the best is yet to come. Mm-hmm. I mean, what you're describing with that project, that's my entire artistic career.
Yeah. So you know? Funny.
And you just keep going. You do the next thing and you do it for the love of it. You do it for the selfless thing. And always the process itself is the flipping point, you know? It's
yeah.
What we're learning along the way, how we're growing. That's, you can't lose if that's your ultimate, you know, guiding star.
Yeah. And I think also
and the friends you make along the way, you know, what, you and I talking today, yeah. It's like, this is the treasure of a lifetime of art making. You know?
Yeah. And I think within that is like something that like I'm kind of adding to my own life is like flexible goals, because I think appreciation of that, sometimes being open to goals that you didn't know were goals, like friendship is a perfect example of that. Or when you set a goal, it's good to have goals because you want to work towards something.
Sure.
But if you're so fixed on that, you're going to miss other things that happen that are maybe more beautiful or like, you know, because there's so many, you know, I've been as over the past now almost 2 weeks, I've been like kind of dissecting of like, okay, how do I feel about people that didn't come to the show? Why didn't they come to the show? Or like, and I'm like, okay, is that really what I want to be my focus? Or do I want to focus on the people that did come to the show and like, or the people that were willing to give their time to like work on this project with me? You know, they didn't get paid. They got some Cheez-Its and a pizza, you know, like they offered a lot. And so like flexible goals as well as, yeah, that process, being engaged in the process, because I think being engaged in the process allows you to be open to goals that you maybe weren't expecting. And same with those emotions, like what I've liked about this emotions that I'm trying to bring into my own performance and daily life is like, what emotions might I experience today that I never even thought were possible? Or like, what's a new meaning that I didn't even know? Because I'm either like, I don't want to be locked in like good, bad. I want to be like, okay, maybe I learned what it's like to, what's the emotion for connecting with one person who really likes this, building that relationship into a lifelong friendship, maybe, you know, that's a, I don't know if I'd call that emotion or a goal. I think they're all mixed in together, but yeah, just that flexibility of goal, process oriented, openness to different unexpected rewards.
Oh yeah. I mean, having the attitude of gratitude, it sounds like a platitude, but the attitude of gratitude is the attitude, mm-hmm. and it's not just a platitude. If that's like the lens that allows you to notice those accomplishments, you know, if you're fixated on the goal that you set and it has to look the way you imagined it would be, mm-hmm. then yeah, you're paving the way for disappointment or,
yes.
Know. So yeah, it's indispensable if you want to enjoy life.
Yeah. And I'm my goal right now is to shorten the amount of time that the audience will experience the hilarity of my effort and committed trying my hardest and not succeeding and their appreciation of that. And my acknowledgement of that is like, I'm trying to get that closer together. Cause I do think, yeah, but again, maybe that goal I'll hold on to loosely and try and, yeah, appreciate the people that are willing to work with me along the way. Yeah. I walked out of a clown class yesterday into a beautiful sunset and I was just like, wow, like yesterday was just a great day. And I was so lucky to be in a clown class, see a sunset. I got a little shrimp bowl somewhere and then I got to go do another clown jam with some friends. And I got to spend 6 hours clowning and eat a shrimp bowl. What a gift.
Oh, man. So good to talk to you, Paul.
Yeah, it was awesome.
For the soul. I mean, talking to you, it's like, man, I need so many things I needed to hear. I hope that's true for the listeners, too. And if it's not, I accept it.
Yeah, we're okay. We're okay.
Well, it's been wonderful talking with you. We'll do it again soon. It won't take 3 years. Let's check in. After the next installment of the Flying Cockroach.
Yeah, I think that'll be in May. All right, dude.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Feels like shit. Breathe. The lovely gift of life. The lovely gift of life. The lovely gift of life. A lovely gift of life. The lovely gift of life.